You are listening to episode 39 of season 13 of the New World of Order for day 265 of 2019. So we're continuing our tour of all Linux packages ever, and today we're going to talk about NSInter, which is a little command from the util Linux package. And honestly, it's probably the only one we will get to today because it's not a huge deal. The command itself isn't that complex, but the context you need in order to talk about NSInter is kind of a big deal. It's a big topic that will probably take a little while. So that's most likely what we'll get to today, is NSInter and namespaces in Linux. That's the context around NSInter. So before we dive into that, let's do some listener feedback. Most recent listener feedback is from IceCream95. If you've been listening to the show for a couple of months now, you know this Nick pretty well. IceCream95 sent me a lot of great information, set me straight on a couple of things, made some suggestions, really appreciate it. He says that this is in response to mcookie. He says to get more secure random strings, you can run head-c24/dev/random pipe base 64. I like this method. This is really cool. He says you might need to run find slash, the root partition in the background until the kernel can get enough entropy. I did not find that to be the case on my system, but my system's pretty powerful and pretty quick, I guess. So let's see. Let's try this for fun. Let's do a head instead of the shortened version. I'm going to do the long version of this command, which is --bytes=24. Because that's what the -c actually stands for. I thought it was count or something like that, but it's actually characters, but it's actually bytes, --bytes=24. And then we'll say, /dev/random, and then we're gonna pipe it to base 64 and see what happens. Yep, that looks pretty good. That looks pretty random. Oh, and this one, now the second time I do it, I see that there's a plus sign in the string. Now that may or may not work for you, depending on what you want. The base 64 process doesn't just use alphanumeric characters. Oh, and there's a slash as well, the forward slash. So you could, I guess, do something like head --bytes=24/dev/random pipe. Base 64 pipe, and then said quote search or /:\punct:\ I don't know. Then you'd have to come up with a number that you want to use, I guess, non-randomly and then /g and then close quote. And if we do that, then we get strings without any non-numeric things, and quite likely wherever I see a 4, I could posit that was a slash or a plus or some non-numeric symbol. I mean, it doesn't have to be the number 4. You could make it the letter A or the letter Z. It doesn't really matter. And I'm sure there's some very clever way to come up with a pseudo-random replacement. That's only if you need, for some reason, only alphanumeric strings. I don't know necessarily why you would need that, but you know how some things are. Okay, so that's that. The next comment I get is, I got from Avery Violet, I'm not really sure, A-V-E-R-Y, and then Violet. And Avery Violet contacted me over Mastodon and said, in episode 1338 of GNU World Order, you talked about getting into Linux. I started using Linux when my parents gave me a low-spec netbook that barely ran the pre-installed OS, Windows 10. I installed Linux Mint and jumped right in, learning shell commands to do what a GUI couldn't. Throwing yourself directly into the fire might not work for everyone, but if you're naturally curious, I urge you to dive into Nix without looking back. That's a really cool story. I love hearing this kind of tale, sort of origin stories. And honestly, I would think that this would be more, I kind of expected that this would be more common than, at least anecdotally, I can demonstrate it actually is. It being getting a netbook, and being introduced to Linux by it. I've already talked in this series about the EEE PC or the EEE PC from Asus. What was it, Asus or Acer? No, Asus. And I remember it being sort of a kind of a game changer. And I think looking back, it still was, just kind of getting Linux into people's homes, like an actual instance of it, of them almost knowing that it was Linux and kind of accepting that. So I do think that was a big deal. I think it could have been a bigger deal had Asus sort of stuck to their guns and just said, well, this is the OS of this device. But I mean, in a way, the EEE PC was as big a deal probably as Android is, if we're looking at people using Linux and sort of finding it normal to use Linux. That said, branding issues versus Linux versus Android, that sort of thing, notwithstanding. But anyway, so I think I would have thought that this would have been a more common thing. It didn't end up being common. And yet there's another level of this, which I don't think Avery Violet is saying. Avery Violet, I'm not sure how to pronounce nicknames from the internet. It's funny because when you read it in Mastodon, you don't really think about how to pronounce it, but then once you say it on a podcast, then you're suddenly doubting everything that you say. So Violet, or B-Girl, if I refer to just the Mastodon account name. So I think, and I don't think this is what Violet/B-Girl is saying. I think Violet B-Girl, that's not bad. I don't think this is what B-Girl is saying, but what it makes me think of is the idea of, yeah, jumping into the fire or going cold turkey or whatever idiom you want to use for it, just sort of saying, okay, today is the day I am switching to Linux and I'll never look back. That kind of decisive action, I think, would be more common. But I think, again, I think it's not as common as one might expect. I don't know why I think it would be more common. I think in one way, I think the quintessential kind of power user or nerd or geek or whatever, I think that would be a thing that they would do. Just think, okay, well, I'm going to just start using Linux now. That's my new reality. But I don't think that's it. Like, in practice, I don't know how easy it is to do that. I don't know how common that is, or how realistic it is, how pragmatic it is. Sometimes you just don't have the luxury of relearning everything that you once knew. That certainly was not the case with me. I wasn't able to just suddenly switch to Linux and not use anything else, because there was everyday work to get done, whether it was schoolwork or work or whatever. It was just, when you switch like that, you take a step back. And I think that's the hardest thing for people to do, is take that step back, learn what you need to learn, and then keep going from that point. And I think it's great that B-Girl was able to do that. But I don't know that everyone is, and I certainly wasn't able to. I mean, there are probably degrees of it in a way. You know, if you choose to start using Unix or Linux or whatever, then isn't that kind of jumping into a fire, even if you're not jumping right into the center of the fire, and so you're kind of progressing from there. But I think what's being described here, where you just uninstall Windows and then install Linux, I think it's a really cool thing. And I wonder, now that Linux is just easier and easier and easier to use, I wonder if there will kind of be more instances of that. I don't know. I'm not sure. It feels like it should be, and I, you know, in half of the time when I'm sitting around thinking of my Linux history, I think, oh man, wouldn't it have been great to have gotten into it much, much sooner, so I would have all those war stories like people do. And I think I've gotten over that a little bit. Because while it is cool to have all those war stories and stuff, frankly, they're war stories. You know, it's like they're things that sound neat in when you hear it, but if you actually have to go through it, it's not really all that great. There are war stories. There are stories of unpleasant happenings. And it only sounds cool because we didn't have to go through the theme that it's describing. So I've kind of gotten over that. And now the new thing is I wish I'd gotten into Linux much, much later. Like, I wish I was getting into it now to experience what that must be like. Like, what must it be like to get into Linux in a time where you can install it and just have everything working on several laptops? What must it be like to get into Linux in such a way that you just go out and purchase a System 76 laptop and now that's your computer, that sort of thing? I mean, there's still road bumps. You know, there are file formats that you have to get used to, and file closed formats that you have to abandon, and applications that you have to get used to, and applications you have to abandon, and I think there's a lot of kind of feeling it out, sort of like, well, I heard through the grapevine that I could still use this other application that I used to use, but I have to use something called Wine, or something called Code. What's the company? Codeweavers or whatever. Code something. So should I try that? I mean, this person on this forum says it's a great idea, and these other people say it's a horrible idea, and these people say that I should just stick to the free and open source stuff. But they kind of sound, they seem like they might just be engaged in a religious war here. So maybe I should just, you know, and it's just this whole thing. So who knows? Maybe it's not any different ultimately. But it is interesting to think, I guess, about different experiences of switching to Linux or BSD or Unix or whatever it is. That's it for listener feedback. So let's continue into namespaces on Linux. But before we do that, actually, I should say, if you have stories of how you got into Linux, do let me know. I love hearing that sort of story, and I think other listeners would enjoy it as well. Because even when something is on the surface the same as some other story, the reactions are certainly unique to each person. So even if you and I both found Linux through the EEE PC or something, the way that we find it will still be different. I did not, for the record, find Linux through the EEE PC, but the reaction to it would be different. So it's probably a story worth hearing, a story worth telling, whether you really think it is or not. Okay, so now we can cover namespace. Well, nsinter is the command. That's the next one up in Unix, in util Linux. And in order to understand what nsinter does, we need to understand first about namespaces in Linux. And namespaces are, I mean, in anything, namespaces provide uniqueness. That's the purpose of a namespace. So if, for instance, for me, the easy example would be if you're programming in something, for instance, C++, and you decide to use a library from some other, from a non-standard place. So for instance, or rather a third-party library, right? So it's not C++, it's Boost. So if you're using Boost, then everything within Boost, in order to denote that it is contained in the Boost library set, you use the namespace of Boost. Whereas in C++, when you're normally using, you're just using your standard namespace. That's what namespaces do pretty much anywhere. Anytime you hear that term, the idea is that there's some kind of designation, like in XML, there's some kind of designation that this property, even though it may have the same name as some other property, it's unique because here I'm speaking about it within this namespace. And we even do that in real life. We talk about certain things in different contexts, and there's an implied or sometimes explicit, although we don't usually call it a namespace in real life, but we do call it, for instance, context. So if you're talking about, for instance, what kind of engine something is running, then in the car industry, you might be talking about a certain kind of engine and an engine with certain kinds of capabilities. Whereas in the computer industry, you're not talking about a physical V8 engine or something. You're talking about or 2-horsepower engine, whatever. You're talking about a software technology. You might say, well, what this software uses an Nginx, well, that's a bad example, an Apache or a PHP engine or a Python. Python is the engine or whatever it might be. So you qualify things with namespaces. In Linux, the same thing happens. We have namespaces. Recently, we have namespaces. So this was introduced into Linux, into the kernel, over, so it was sort of slowly introduced. It was something that got sort of incrementally rolled into the Linux kernel over time. I don't remember the exact lineage or the exact the delineation of each component, but you had things like namespaces, you had C groups or control groups, you had containers that started sort of messing around in there, and you had all these related technologies that kind of coalesced into what we are now proudly calling as Linux users containers, because containers, and not everyone knows this, containers really are a Linux technology. It's a technology that you can say very fairly is unique and original with a caveat to Linux. And the caveat is that BSD jails, I think, set sort of the stage for this, the whole concept around this. But the container thing, the containers technology that is taking the server or serverless world by storm right now is very much a Linux technology. And while you can certainly do things like run containers on a Windows server or whatever, this idea is that you are running Linux as a unique process. And that's where namespaces come into play, because a container is really a lot less sort of physical and tangible than I think we usually picture when we think of a container. A container, you think of something having walls and having a definition and a shape to it, whereas on Linux, in software, the container, it doesn't have to be all in one physical or one consolidated, you know, a folder. It doesn't have to be in one place, because there are these other things by which we measure the way that software interacts with other processes, and those are process IDs, PIDs. They are environments, they are root directories, things like that. So you don't have to say, okay, well, this is my container, and there it is. It's one entity on the computer. Instead, you can define containers by parentage and by process IDs and so on. So namespaces kind of exist in your file system. You can kind of get a feel for what namespaces exist in two different ways. The first way, I guess, the way that is available to me on Slackware, because I've got Udo Linux 2.27, is to simply look in the slash proc directory. So if I do an ls, let me get over to a terminal here. Actually, I'm going to become root for this just because I feel like it's going to be handy to be root for this. So I'm root, and then I'm going to look in. I'm just going to do an ls of proc, and then I'm going to do asterisk, and then I'm going to do ns for namespace. And that returns quite a few results of, for instance, proc 78, proc 7, proc 8, proc 911, proc 912, and so on. So it's all the PIDs on my system and sort of the definitions of their environments underneath them. So for instance, proc, I'll just take, well, let me do PID of bash, and it looks like my current bash PID is 27222. So I'll do an ls slash proc slash 27222/ns for namespace. And it looks like I've got six entities there. There's IPC, there's MNT, net, PID, user, and UTS. So that's a normal listing of a process within proc. Not too big of a deal yet. So now what we're gonna do is we'll first prove that we're not running tcsh. That's just an example that I just sort of came up with right away, because I know that if you're running one, you're probably not running the other. So I'm going to do pid of tcsh, nothing. I'm going to do a sudo pid of tcsh just to make sure it's not being run. That's the wrong password. Just to make sure that it's not being run. There we go, nothing. Yeah, I get nothing in return. So I'm not running tcsh right now. What I'm going to do now that I've demonstrated that I'm not running tcsh is I'm going to start tcsh, but I'm going to do it by creating a new namespace. And the way that you do that is with not in senter, you do it with a command called unshare, which really I shouldn't be talking about it yet because it doesn't come up until later in UTIL Linux. But it's kind of hard, again, to sort of talk about in senter without demonstrating this first. So unshare runs a program with a different namespace than its actual parent. That's what unshare does. And the way that we can do that is sudo unshare dash f dash p, and those, both of them stand for, the dash f is a fork, and the dash p is the PID, process, PID, whatever, it's actually PID, so that's what that is. And then we'll do a space dash dash mount dash proc, and then the command that we want to run as a forked process with a new namespace and mounted under proc, tcsh. That's what I want to run just for demonstration purposes. I do that, and it drops me into a tcsh session. I can even do from within this session pid of tcsh, and it tells me it's pid 1. Wait a minute, what? Pid 1? Yeah, that's right. So this is a new namespace. So as far as this namespace is concerned, TCSH is the first and original process of its environment. So it's TCSH, pid 1. Now, obviously in real life, if I do PS space 1, for instance, I get returned pid 1 is command init, which is what you should see no matter what. That's PID 1 on a Linux system, is the init system, whatever it may be, whether it's systemd or it just init or ninit or minit, it does, or what's the other one, RC, OpenRC, whatever it might be, that shouldn't be TCSH, it should be the init system. Now, if I do, this is where it gets even more interesting, right? So PID of TCSH is 1 according to itself, but over here in my other terminal, if I do sudo pid of TCSH, and we know that this is the only TCSH session we have running, so I do that, and it returns 28681. And in fact, if I do a PS tree, and I'll type it through less, and then I'll search for TCSH, actually just CSH, because I'm not sure how it gets listed. Here it is. It gets listed it's getting listed under a bunch of other processes. Clearly not PID 1. It's clearly the child of this bash session, which in turn is a child of urxvt, which in turn is a child of kde init 4, and so on. So it's definitely not PID 1. But outside of the namespace, the PID is seen as one thing, but inside the namespace, the PID is completely different. So that's namespaces. That's how to create a namespace. And what does it all mean? Well, ines inter is a way to sort of dip into that namespace for a command. So, for instance, have you ever, I know that a lot of us use SSH as in a very interactive way, but if you've ever issued a command remotely via SSH, this is kind of like that. So you do like ines inter, probably sudo actually. So sudo ines inter dash, let's do all. So we're entering all namespaces of, let's do dash dash pid equals file. So we're going to have to show, I think we're going to have to point it to a file, which is slash proc slash, what did I say, 28681. Okay, so here's what we'll do. We'll do a sudo ines inter dash dash pid equals slash proc slash 28681 slash ns, so now we're in the namespace directory, and then pid, PID. And then we're going to do, we'll just issue the command ping 8.8.8.8. Okay, so that's running. Now we'll go over to our terminal running our little TCSH shell, and we'll do a pid of ping. And it confirms that the pid of ping from within the container, again, is 23. Now, if we go over to our other terminal outside of our container and do a pid of ping, we get 29332. So we've successfully run a ping command inside the namespace of this TCSH process. And once again, we're seeing different results of the PIDs as seen, as interpreted by whether you're inside the container or whether you're outside the container. And that's what ines inter does. So it kind of dips into the namespace of whatever you define, and it runs a command. If you don't give it a command, according to the man page, let's see, according to the man page, if you don't provide a command, it executes a shell somewhere. I'm not seeing that now, but I read that before, so just trust me. If you don't provide it, if program is not given, then shell is run. Default is slash bin slash sh. So you could just ines inter that namespace and drop yourself into a shell. I have found in playing around with this that, and all I've done is play around with this. I don't use, to be clear, I don't use unshare or ines inter or anything like that in real life. The closest I've gotten to this is using Kubernetes, which leverages a bunch of, all of these kinds of, all of that same namespace stuff to build containers and pods and so on. But while playing around with these commands directly, I have the main problem that I've had, or the challenge that I've encountered, is knowing where to change the namespace into, what manner of namespace, whether it's the net or the mount or the pid or whatever. So that's been a little bit of a challenge for me to try to figure out from all the documentation. But then again, I don't really have to. I don't have a need for this. So that's how it can be used. That's what it does. That's the purpose. Ines inter to dip into the namespace, or to enter the namespace. Ines inter. Unshare to create a child process that divorces itself from the parent, forks itself off from the parent. And remember, the commands there that you need is or the options rather, unshare dash fp dash dash mount dash proc. So that's fork and then pid and then mount. Mount proc, and then whatever command you want to fork. You wouldn't probably use these yourself directly for what everyone actually uses this technology for, which is containers. I doubt that you would be building your own infrastructure with Unshare, and you probably wouldn't be using NSEnter, although you certainly could. NSEnter is a valid command for lots of different things, and it is looking at all the same technologies and the same engine in the computer namespace as everything else. So, like, everything else meaning, like, related technology. So, for instance, if you were running a Docker container somewhere, you can certainly use Docker, like, a Docker command to get into the container, the Docker container, but then again, you can also actually just use NSEnter. It's not super straightforward, but I mean, you can do it. I found it online. It says that you can do sudo nsenter -t backtick docker inspect --format, and then a bunch of other stuff about the state and the PID of that container, and then docker ps -lq, and a bunch of other single letter options that I have no idea what they do. But you can, you know, so in other words, they have to use Docker to introspect the Docker container to find out where they want to NSEnter into. But once they have all that information, they can use NSEnter to get into that container, into that namespace. I should specify that they're getting into that namespace. And there's a whole bunch of interesting sort of ramifications around this too. There's the namespace technology, and then there's the way that the container technologies that spring forth from this namespace and C group and all that other sort of stuff that got built into the kernel. It's how they actually utilize them. So for instance, Docker apparently, and I haven't actually looked at this, this is a blog that I'll put a link to this in the show notes, but apparently Docker, for instance, a Docker container marks PID 1 as whatever the entry point happens to have been, just like when we launched TCSH ourselves with Unshare, whereas more sort of like later technologies that sort of looked at the problem from a little bit of the benefit of seeing where Docker sort of just hurried into this, you know, created this tool set, which, I mean, in itself, of course, LXC, as far as I know, preceded Docker, so I don't know why Docker didn't sort of take a lesson from LXC, but anyway, more modern solutions like RKT, which I think came out of the CoreOS project, they allow PID 1 to remain reserved within that container, simply because a lot of times applications written for Linux don't bother looking at PID 1. That, you know, everyone knows what that is. So if your process, if some important thing is running as PID 1, that can cause surprising and maybe even unforeseen problems. And so that's not necessarily something that you want to do. And apparently Docker just kind of looks past that. And I'm not sure who's adjusting for the problems or if these problems are just theoretical. I don't know. I haven't done enough research into it. But it's an interesting read, this blog post. It's hackernoon.com/v-curious-case-of-pid-namespaces-1CE86B6BC900. So if you want to just type that in, you can read it yourself, or I'll put it in the show notes and you can read it at your leisure. So that's everything about namespaces and NSEnter. And honestly, that didn't take as long as I thought. I thought that it would be a lot more complex than that, but as a summary, that kind of works. And since it's kind of long enough to be self-contained, I think I'll just end this episode here. It's a bit short, I know, but I think that's actually a really good sort of wrap-up or a nice little wrapper around the namespace issue. And of course, this isn't the last we'll hear of it. We'll hear of it again when we do get to Unshare in UDA Linux. We'll hear about it again a little bit when we talk about LXC. And I'm sure I'll pop out C groups, maybe. Is there a command for C groups? I don't know. But yeah, it'll come up again, I'm sure, You'll hear this is not the last you've heard of it, and it is something worth looking into. If you haven't really investigated this side of PIDs and namespaces and stuff like that, it's something to start dipping your toes into, because it really is. It's changing the way that a lot of services are being run, and it's just worth knowing. You can kind of avoid it for a long time, but eventually you're gonna run into it. You're gonna run into something that only provides a Docker container for installing, or that only provides, something for OpenShift that's the only way that you can run this thing. Love it or hate it, that's it's a thing that's happening right now. People are really jumping on board the whole cloud native sort of development stuff, and it's worth knowing. You don't have to necessarily dive into it, but you may as well kind of dip your toes. Or you could take a lesson from Avery of Violet and just jump right in all the way. Just get rid of your computer, live on OpenShift, and be cloud native. I'm not necessarily recommending that, I'm just saying you could do that. Anyway, that's it for this episode. Thanks for listening, and I will talk to you next time. Podcast. This has been Klaatu. You can reach me on IRC. I'm on the Freenode network, usually in channels such as Augcast Planet, Slacker Media, Slackware, a couple of others. My nick on IRC is not Klaatu. You can also reach me lately on Mastodon. My username there is @Klaatu @mastodon.xyz. Of course, you can email me at klaatu@member.fsf.org. That's klaatu@member.fsf, as in Free Software Foundation.org. And of course, you can visit my various websites, gnuworldorder.info and slackermedia.info. I will see you next time.
More productive employee on the job, and I've had quite a time at parties with this new baby head.